relation like this. K squared over 2m is kinetic energy u with some kind of background potential. And we find that using this for the free boson, we have this oscillator picture. And using this oscillator picture, we find that we can package the oscillator coordinate momentum into a field, phi, complex field of phi. And then the dynamics of this collection of oscillators is described by this a phase-space Lagrange, where this oscillator coordinate
on
the phase space.
Please turn on the microphone.
It's probably not turned on the microphone.
Then from this phase space Lagrangian, we can derive this equation motion. And that's a classical equation motion. And we also show that the physical quantity, like a density of this boson gas, can be mapped into this absolute value of phi squared in this field theory language. So this is our starting point. So this is a free boson theory. And so the question is following. When we turn on the interaction between bosons, what kind of multiplication we should have? So that we can describe an interacting boson gas. Okay. So the total interaction potential V is simply I less than J V xi minus xj. So that is some kind of pair interaction potential. We notice that using the boson density, we can write this interaction potential as dx dy rho x vx minus y rho y with 1/2. The 1/2 just to avoid the double counting, you know. Here we only consider I less than j. So every pair, if you don't have this 1/2, every pair is counted twice. Okay, and so this is a new energy term. Okay, so we know that the phase space Lagrangian contains this some kind of biphase term like a px dot term. And the rest is just energy. This is just energy. Okay. Now with the interaction, we get additional contribution to the energy. So therefore, from this, we find the phase-space Lagrangian for the classical or field theory for the interacting boson is given by dxi. So this term, biphase term, remain unchanged. And then we have the same Lagrangian term. Oh, sorry, same energy term. But we have this actual term. Just add this actual term. So now this rho is just a phi x absolute value square dx minus y phi y absolute value square. Well, I'm using this, kind of using 2 phi. Okay. And that's it. So once we include this actual energy term, we obtain a new classical theory. So this is a new classical field theory. And the Lagrangian formulation is nice, because once you write down Lagrangian, that's totally defined the classical system. And from this Lagrangian, and by doing the variation, you know, by doing this variation of Lagrangian, respect to this, maybe, if I consider the variation for Lagrangian, respect to change for phi field, we can find the stationary paths. And the stationary paths essentially give us equation motion. Okay. So let's just do it. This is non-local Lagrangian because we have an instantaneous non-local interaction. That's kind of a, you know, speed of light here is infinity. We assume two particles with a separation can interact instantaneously. Yeah, like Newton's law. It's not like a Newton's gravity, not like Einstein's gravity. Yeah, that's kind of approximation here. And so let's derive this equation motion. Okay. So let's consider this change of Lagrangian. The change of Lagrangian contains two pieces. The one piece is linearly dependent on the change of a psi star, a phi star. Another piece is a linear for phi. So at the linear order, the change of a Lagrangian have these two pieces. And so here, we will only concentrate on this piece. So that makes things easier. So what is this piece? When you make a change of a Lagrangian, then that's this. We have contribution from here. Okay. And then from here, we can write this term as a phi star using integration by part, 1 over minus 1 over 2 derivative of x squared phi plus u phi star phi minus this. Okay. We just are taking, so this is a partial x phi star partial x phi. We just bring this partial x to the other side using integration by part. Then write this term in this form. Okay, we write in this form, so this term gave us a contribution of minus delta phi star minus 1/2 m partial x squared plus u phi. Okay. And then we have also a contribution from here. So here, let's make a simplification, you know. So let's assume our interaction potential is only short-ranged. So it is equal to g times delta x minus y. Just to simplify our calculation, we don't have to assume so. Okay. And for this short-ranged interaction, we can replace this v by g times delta. Then this double integration became a single integration. So that's become minus dx 1/2 g phi epsilon alu to the fourth power. So that's a much simpler. So we'll derive equation motion for this simpler case. And actually, in the lecture notes, we derive equation motion for the more complicated case, for the more general case. And in this case, again, so this is like a phi star square, phi square. So when you do a variation, we find there's term minus 1/2 g, 2 times delta phi star and the phi star phi square. So this is what we get. Okay. So we can just collecting the delta phi star term, just taking this out. and that's it. And then there's another piece, which is proportional delta phi. Okay. And in order to derive equation motion, the equation motion actually is a term in front of a delta phi star term and in front of a delta phi term. So the both equal to zero, that to give a stationary path. Okay. So if the one in front of delta phi star term, so there's I here. And we find this equation motion, just this whole piece equal to zero. So let me just write here. So this one is just modified, just plus this U term, just a G. So this is what we get. Okay. So to summarize, once you add the interaction, the equation motion obtained is an actual correction, and the energy obtained another actual correction is minus 1/2 g phi epsilon value to the fourth power. For this very special short-range interaction. So the correction is pretty simple. Okay, and that's it. So this really gave us this the classical field theory for interacting bosons. Okay, so we kind of achieve our goal. And the one thing we notice that the equation motion is no longer linear. It's not the linear equation motion. Remember, the equation motion for harmonic oscillator are linear. So that means harmonic oscillator, that linear equation motion. But here we have a phi and a phi term, but here we have a phi cube term. So it's nonlinear. And the Lagrangian, for free boson, they are quadratic. We always have phi squared. But then when you add interaction, we get this quartic term. So therefore, both reflect that in the present interaction, we can no longer treat this classical field theory as a collection of harmonic oscillator. We get an unharmonic term. So this is an unharmonic oscillator. That's it. Yes?
So what was phi again? Because you said it was like x plus ip, and those were not
initially.
Phi.
Yeah, phi. Remember. We view this the boson, free boson system, as a collection oscillator. We also have a, you know, xk and a pk. K label different oscillator. So xp are coordinate momentum oscillator. And then we repackage x plus ip and repackage them into this field of phi. So phi actually is packaged, the oscillator coordinate and an oscillator momentum.
So we can get equations of motion for this
coordinate and the vector? Yes. Actually, this equation motion, so without this, if g equals 0 for free boson system, this equation motion is a repackaged equation motion for the oscillator. That is xk dot equal to pk over mk, and pk dot equal to minus spring constant k times xk. So for the oscillator, we have this kind of linear equation motion. When we repackage xp into phi, this linear equation motion became this equation motion. But certainly with g equal to 0. U is here in the m and the k. And remember, m, 1 over m equal k equal to k, that's equal to this epsilon k. So with this choice of mass and the spring constant of the oscillator, this oscillator would reproduce this kind of a dispersion spectrum, the single boson spectrum, that's energy level spacing. So that's how things get connected. And from this dispersion relation, we know the required oscillator frequency. The oscillator frequency should reproduce this dispersion relation. So therefore, the spring constant mass of oscillator is determined by this dispersion relation. And then when you repackage xp into phi and plug in this expression for epsilon k, which is k squared plus u, then you obtain this Schrödinger equation actually. So that's a kind of another way to look at the Schrödinger equation, just oscillators. And then when you add interaction, then it's just a modified unharmonic term. Actually, this term is not hard to understand, because this is like effective potential. You can see when the particles start to interact, every particle not only see the background potential U, it also see potential from other particles. And so this expression, U times G times rho, is actually an effective potential seen by this seen by each particle. And that's it. Okay. So that's almost the full story for this classical field theory. So now it's application. So first application of this classical field theory for the oscillator is a phase transition. It's a phase and a phase transition. Remember, let's remind you what is a phase and phase transition. You know, for the quantum system, suppose at zero temperature we have a quantum system, we have a ground state. If a ground state energy as a function of parameter, here our parameter is U. Let's make a U as our parameter. If you change U, then the ground state energy will be function of U. If this ground state energy as a function of U have a singularities, then that's a phase transition. Then we say there's a phase transition. Usually, the ground state energy should be a smooth function of any parameter which is entering into theory. But sometimes this energy is a singular. And certainly, when you have an interacting boson, to find a true ground state energy for the quantum system is difficult. So we don't know how to do that. So here, what we do is that we already say we have this classical approximation of a quantum system. So this is a classical theory. So therefore, we just calculate the classical ground state energy and pretend this classical ground state energy is a ground state energy of a quantum system. Just like what it did for this double well potential theory. Okay. So therefore, for the classical theory, this energy is basically, so let's just take this part. So that is 1 over 2m partial x phi x value square plus u phi x value square plus 1 half g. Okay. So this is a this is the total energy, and this is a classic energy. And for the classic energy, how do you get the ground state energy? We just minimize energy. Remember, this phi actually is a packaged x and p, so phi is like a phase space coordinate. So for every phi, correspond to classical states. You know, remember this x and p give us a classical state. But phi just a packaged x and p, so therefore phi also corresponds to classical states. So we just find the phi, which minimizes this energy, then that means we find the classical states With the lowest energy, that's ground state energy. Okay. And to do that is pretty simple. First, this term tells us the phi is a constant. Because constant phi can minimize this derivative term. Okay. Then for the constant phi, we just drop this derivative term, then we just minimize this function. And then that's became pretty simple. And we find the following expression. The ground energy as function u is equal to the volume times zero if u is bigger than zero, and times minus 1/2 u g if u is less than zero. U squared, sorry. Because the phi, which minimizes potential energy, is given by zero if u is greater than zero, equal to minus u over g if u less than zero. That's it. Okay. So means if u is bigger than zero, this potential as a function for absolute value for phi, you know, goes like this. That's for the u greater than zero. If u is less than zero, then this potential have this minimal is shifted, and this is a minus u over g. So this is for u less than zero. Yes. For the non-interacting theory, that's very interesting. Okay, so let's think about what happened. If u is less than zero, what that means for non-interacting theory. So that means the cake to zero state would have a negative energy. Okay, so that means when we put a boson in the cake to zero states, we have energy u is negative, so energy be lowered. If you add more boson to that, and it be lowered even more. So here we don't fix number of bosons. We just minimize the energy, not fixing number of bosons. And if u is for non-interacting system, for negative u, the energy is not bound from below. You can add whatever number of boson to k to zero states and keep lowering energy forever. And this question is very, very good, because when you have an interaction, then you have to pay. When I add too many bosons, when boson density is very high, and the energy going to be became positive, because this for G positive, this representing a repulsive interaction. Remember, the V x minus y is equal to G delta x minus y. So for positive G, it's a repulsive interaction. So here I have to say it. So when you have a repulsive interaction, they have to pay energy when they have a boson density too high. So therefore, for interacting boson, you can only put so many boson in k to zero states. And then the energy will turn around. And then you'll find at only certain density, the energy is lower. So therefore, this is a really good question. So this transition corresponds to, for positive u, the ground state is simply a no boson state. Then for the negative u, we have some bosons. Okay. So therefore, but mathematically, this is representing a phase transition. It's right here. You can see. The ground state energy as function of u is a volume times zero if u is positive, but times something, a quadratic function of u if u is negative. So there's a singularity. As function of u, the ground state energy is zero here. Then became this some curvature. So the second order derivative is not continuous. And this represents the so-called second order phase transition. The value is continuous, the first order derivative is continuous, but the second order derivative have a jump. Okay. So this representing a phase, so this is a typical case of phase transition. Yes. Okay. For the first order phase transition, the energy as a function of some parameter like u would have a kink. So the first order derivative is not continuous. But in this case, you can see only the second order derivative is not continuous. So the second order phase transition. Okay, and so this corresponds to a superfluid transition. But let me describe this more carefully. What I described here is a zero temperature phase transition, as we're changing this background potential or chemical potential. Okay, so if chemical potential is too high, then the system rather don't have any particle, so particle number is zero. So this is one canonical picture at zero temperature. When the chemical potential becomes negative, then the system would have some particles. Okay, so we have two phases. One phase have no particle, another phase have some particle. The phase with some particle actually is a superfluid phase. The phase with no particle is contributive phase. But this is zero temperature phase transition. And what people refer more commonly actually is a finite temperature phase transition. For the finite temperature phase transition, things are a little more complicated, so let me just describe it. And for the finite temperature phase transition, if a temperature is greater than certain critical temperature, then the occupation number for the boson, in those orbitals, you have some occupation number just based on the boson distribution function. Okay, but however, for t less than tc, then suddenly you still have some kind of occupation here. But then the occupation at the k equals zero orbital became microscopic because suddenly have a spike. So for the finite temperature phase transition, if you just look at a k to zero level, you'll find that for the k to zero orbital, for t greater than tc, the number of particles is order one. Then for t less than tc, the number of particles at the k to zero level suddenly became order n. N is total number of particles. That's a huge jump. Okay. So finite temperature phase transition is more complicated, but here we are describing zero temperature phase transition. It has similar behavior when you look at the k to zero level. For k to zero level, then for u positive, there's no particle at the k to zero level. For u negative, then suddenly there's a spike. Yeah. So when you look at the k to zero level, this phase transition is very similar to the finite temperature phase transition. And for the finite temperature phase transition, the difference is that there is always some kind of particle at the k not equal to zero level, some excited particle on k to zero level. But the transition, similarly, is controlled by, do you have a very few particle at the k to zero level, or you have many particles at the k to zero level? And this led to the so-called concept order parameter. So you have two phases. One phase, the number of particles at the k to zero level is zero thermodynamically. It's order one, not order n. In another phase, the number of particle in the k to zero level or density of particle in the k to zero level became finite. Okay. And in our theory, this one is order parameter. is this other parameter. Because this phi, as a constant, the phi is really representing density. And here, phi is a constant. So here's the picture. Because here, phi is constant. What does constant phi means, remember? The constant phi really means x k to 0 and p k to 0. These two are not equal to 0. But for every other x and p, they are 0. Remember, this phi is just a packaging of x and p of oscillators. Phi is constant means for non-zero wave vector k, those phi k all equal to 0. So those oscillators are not excited. Only the k to 0 oscillator are excited. And that means a constant phi really means that the k to 0 orbital have a large occupation. Because occupation means the level of excitation of the corresponding oscillators. And the other oscillators have no excitation. Okay. So therefore, the phi equal to 0 or not equal to 0 really corresponds to whether do you have a condensation at the k to 0 orbital or not. So that's really the match. These two peaks are really connected. So this is a very important concept. So that's like in the final temperature or in zero temperature, we can use the number of particles at the k to 0 orbital to characterize two phase. And in the field theory, we can using this constant field of phi equal to 0 or not equal to 0 to characterize two phase. Okay. So what is the picture for the final temperature in terms of field theory? In terms of field theory, at final temperature, the phi would have fluctuations. So phi would have some kind of fluctuations. So if a fluctuation of phi is around 0, that really corresponds to t greater than tc case. But however, we could have a situation where the fluctuation of phi is around some kind of average phi, which is not equal to 0. And this average constant term corresponds to the occupation at k to 0 and the other wiggle. So the fluctuation means at k not equal to 0 fluctuation corresponds to occupation at k not equal to 0 orbitals. So therefore, this classical picture and the occupation picture really have this one-to-one mapping. Okay. And again, we see that in the classical picture, using the field theory picture, above TC, the average of phi equal to 0. Below TC, the average of phi not equal to 0. If you include the fluctuations. So therefore, the average of phi is the other parameter. So this one is really the average of phi. In the T equal to 0 limit, there is no fluctuation, so average of phi is equal to phi. That's it. Yes.
This?
Yeah.
The wiggle? They are complicated. What do you mean by a constant? It's certainly dependent, but I don't think they're proportional. But basically, what happens is that they more depend on temperature. The higher the temperature, the more fluctuation. So I think that's a better picture. They don't depend on T, but very sensitive, but they can be very sensitive. And so now let's give this picture,
this final temperature picture. So I want to emphasize that here only plot energy as function of absolute value of phi, but we can also plot energy as a function of phi, which is complex. So then we have to really plot the phi would have the real part and imaginary part. So there's a two-dimensional plane to describe phi. And the minimal actually is a circle. Minimal is a circle. So therefore, the phi don't have to be this. You can add any face. So any point on this circle will be fine. Will be the would minimize energy. Okay. So in a sense, the ground state are highly degenerate in this case. So any point on this circle will be, have same energy, they are degenerate. Okay. So this is again the classic situation for symmetry breaking. Example of symmetry breaking. Because remember, this energy do not depend on phase of phi. So there's a U1 symmetry here. But however, when U is negative, when you minimize energy, then the ground state have to pick a certain value for phi here. Once you make a choice, you break the symmetry. You know, why you take this point, not this point? When you make choice between these two points, you break the symmetry. Okay. So therefore, this phase transition not only have this order parameter, the order parameter also reflect a change of a symmetry. The U greater than zero phase have a full symmetry, you know, because phi equal to zero. So the ground state do not break symmetry. But for the U less than zero phase, the ground state breaks symmetry, although the energy function have a symmetry, but the ground state break it. It's called a spontaneous broken symmetry. And this is a very general feature, you know, for every second order phase transition, it's always associated with a broken symmetry. Okay. Then using the symmetry, we can also understand this finite temperature phase transition. So let's start with the symmetry breaking states, which is here. And let's raise the temperature. When you raise temperature, we got this fluctuation, you know, around this minimum, and maybe along this curve. Then imagine when you raise temperature sufficiently, the thermal fluctuation is so large. Then it really became everywhere around the minimum. Then the average of phi became zero, became symmetric again. And so for the small fluctuation, the thermal fluctuation, the average phi is reduced, but still non-zero. And when temperature is high enough, the fluctuation is all over this minimal, the ring of minimals. Then the average phi became zero. And then you restore the symmetry, you go to this normal phase. So this is a finite temperature phase transition. Okay. So this is really the picture. So that's a phase and phase transition. And I want to emphasize that it's very easy to see the phase transition using this classical picture. And if you want to analyze the quantum Hamiltonian to find the quantum ground state energy, then the phase transition is much trickier. In the classical theory, it's pretty easy to see there's a phase transition here. Yes?
I want to know whether or not this, because that here you add a parameter theta.
Yes.
So whether or not this means you related to the core tangent, core dimension space. Because basically, what symmetry left depends on what's the system you discourse the space time dimension you discourse the.
Okay, yes. I don't know what that
you mean. So theta really describes a symmetry break. You know, theta parameterizes different ground states. Okay.
I mean, if we describe this system in a higher dimension, so
oh,
we
yeah.
can have a more parameter.
No, we don't have more parameter because phi is constant.
In space. So that's just this. The phi is constant in space, so there's no problem. So in any dimension, we have this U1 symmetry breaking. The ground state is just a ring in any dimension. They do not depend on spatial dimension. But however, whether this classical picture is correct or not, does depend on spatial dimension. Remember, we can do this at a zero spatial dimension. And we can get the state transition. We know that is false. The singularity is not really there at the zero dimension. Actually, in one dimension, in one spatial dimension, we also have a problem here. The reason is that here I discussed the thermal fluctuation. When you raise temperature, this phi may fluctuate, may restore the symmetry. I didn't discuss the zero-point motion. You know, in the classic picture, we ignore the zero-point motion. And you may wonder, what is the zero-point motion? You know, how the zero-point quantum fluctuation affect this phi? You know, the phi not only have a classical thermal fluctuation, also have a quantum fluctuation. It turns out that, I will not go into this, it turns out that at a zero dimension, in one spatial dimension, the zero-point quantum fluctuation is very large. So fluctuation phi is very large, is kind of a restored symmetry. So therefore, in one spatial dimension, we actually don't have this kind of symmetry break transition. But however, in two dimensions and beyond, the quantum fluctuations are weak. And this classification actually is correct. So the point is that the classification is not always true. It's only true at higher dimension. In one spatial dimension, things break down. Yeah. Okay. So this is the phase transition. So next, we want to study this the collecting fluctuation. So what is a collecting mode above this above the ground states? So here's the ground states. But what is the collective mode above the ground states? And this is not difficult, you know, because we have this equation motion. So we look at this equation motion. Okay. So using this equation motion, we find that this phi equal to 1 over minus u over t. Let's assume u less than 0. Okay. If you plug this phi into here, this term cancel became 0. And the phi is constant, so partial x will act on the constant also equal to 0. Now phi do not depend on time, so partial t on phi also equal to 0. So if you plug this into here, so this is a solution of equation motion. That's a ground state solution. And so what we want to know is that to obtain the excitation, we just want to get the delta phi. We just want to consider fluctuation, which is a just fluctuation around the ground states. And those are waves. And we want to obtain the weak fluctuation, the waves from these weak fluctuations. And once we obtain the dynamics for the waves of the weak fluctuation, we understand the low energy dynamics. So this is the ideas. So what is the equation for this delta phi? Well, we just plug this expansion into here. Just plug in. When you plug in, we get the delta phi term, we get delta phi cube also, because there's a cubic term. We also get delta phi square term. And here, we only want to keep the linear term. So if you only keep the linear term, we find this equation became I delta phi dot equal to minus 1/2 m partial x squared minus u delta phi minus u delta phi star. We get this equation. And certainly there are terms like a delta phi square, and there is also delta phi cube term. But this term, these two kind of terms, dropped. We only keep the linear term. So what are we doing here? So here what we did is to simplify this classical system and to rethink this as harmonic oscillators. That is the point. Remember, this classical system is a kind of unharmonic oscillator. It's like we have a harmonic oscillator, it's a parabolic potential. But for unharmonic oscillator, we can have some kind of some arbitrary potential. But for the small fluctuation, we can think this as a parabolic potential. So therefore, for the small fluctuation, we can rethink this classical system as a collection of harmonic oscillator. Ignore the nonlinear term. Okay. So this is the step where, for weak fluctuation, we simplify this classical system into a collection of harmonic oscillator by simply keep the linear term. Just keep the quadratic term, linear term in the equation motion. Okay. And so therefore, this linear equation motion, this linearized equation motion actually can be regarded as a collection for off harmonic oscillator again, but with a different, with some different dispersion relation. So to see the dispersion relation, so let's solve this equation. And to solve this equation, let's write this delta phi as as 1 over square root of 2 delta h plus I delta p. So we have this real part and imaginary part. Okay. Just plug this into this, and we find that this equation have a real part and the imaginary part. And so this became two equations. Minus delta p dot equal to minus 1/2 m partial x squared plus 2 u delta h and delta h dot equal to minus 1 over m delta p. Okay, so it have this two piece. And we can write this, this is just a real part, an imaginary part of this one equation, and it's become two equation. And we can combine these two first order time derivative differential equation into the one equation, but which have a second order time derivative. So delta H double dot now is just equal to what we do is we just take a time derivative on both sides. Now that we have a delta p dot, and delta p dot just plug this into here. Then we get this equation. Okay. From this equation, this is just some kind of rather standard wave equation, actually, but with a little bit more complicated spatial derivative, but rather just some kind of wave equation. And we can solve this wave equation in the omega k space. So from here, we see that if delta h is goes like e to the I omega, I kx minus I omega t. And this omega and k, in order for such plane wave solution to be a solution of this equation, k and omega must be related. The relation is that this double dot became minus omega squared, and this this partial x became minus k squared. Then also it also became minus k squared, so that's k squared minus 2u. Remember, u is negative, and that's it. So from here, just rewrite this a little bit. We find the wave is omega k equal to plus minus square root of k squared over 2m, k squared over 2m minus 2u. This is a wave. So what is the significance of this? So those are oscillator frequencies. Because you can see, when you have linearized differential equation, we can view this as a collection oscillator. Actually, in the k space, each K mode corresponds to one oscillator. And then when you calculate this Pinero solution, we get the frequency as function K. And this frequency is just the oscillator frequency of this Kth oscillator. So we go back to oscillator, Hamilton oscillator picture. And then when you quantize this oscillator, we can also view this oscillator as particles, as some kind of particles. And this dispersion relation became energy of these new particles. And this new particle called the phonon. And this is the dispersion relation for the phonon. And in particular, we find that in a small k limit, it's linear in k. Omega k goes like absolute value of k for the small k. So therefore, the low-lying excitation have this kind of energy, omega k equal to linear in k. This is quite different from the free boson picture. Remember, for the free boson picture, the ground state is the boson condensed state. And then the excited state, you just move one boson to here. That energy is equal to k squared over 2m. So we have this quadratic dispersion relation for the single particle excitation. And this is responsible for the specific heat. Goes like 3 over 2. But after all this, we find the waves actually don't have this quadratic dispersion relation. For the small energy, it has a linear dispersion relation. So therefore, the energy for the low-lying excitation do not go like a k squared, but rather goes like a k. So there's much fewer low-lying excitation. So that means the space heat, if you do this calculation, goes like a t cubed. Okay. Yes?
Besides giving us the right t dependence, does this formula actually work?
More or less. The reason it doesn't work is that we make this assumption. And to make it more correct, we had to remove this assumption. And there's another reason this calculation actually breaks down. Because in the actual helium atoms, the repulsion, there's hardcore repulsion. Hardcore repulsion. The repulsion between the atoms is very, very strong. And this calculation actually works if this interaction energy is weak. Then this became a controlled calculation. But in real helium gas, this is not true. But however, in the actual cold atomic system, interaction much weaker. So this actually actually works for the cold atomic gas, atomic gas. Yeah. So that's it. So the bottom line here is that we have a quantum system we don't know how to handle. Then we map the quantum system into the classical system, which you also don't know how to handle, which is because it's nonlinear. Then but for the small fluctuation around the ground states, we can linearize classical system, then became a linear equation motion, became a collection of Hamilton oscillator again. Then we quantize this collection of Hamilton oscillator using this oscillator frequency. Then that will allow us to recover this C to T cube results. Okay.
Yes.
Do you get T cubed?
Yeah, you get T cubed. Dabai models, Dabai model actually very similar to this. Basically say that because this dispersion relation is a phonon. It's a linear, then becomes quadratic. Up to a certain kind of 1/8 with the Brillouin zone. But the Dabai model is not we just assume everything is linear up to boundary of Brillouin zone, then we just do it. And so that's the back model. But this is a kind of more information. Okay, I will stop here. And so in the next class, we will study some phenomenology of this signature breaking phase, which have a name, superfluid, so we will explain What do you mean by superfluid?